Hey Jeff, you excited for today's podcast? I'm looking forward to this one. This is your baby.
I know. I'm really excited about it. This is Canary Speech we're talking to today. But Darren, I feel a little bit weird. I co-founded Canary Speech, and we're going to be talking to my co-founder, Henry O'Connell. And I feel a little weird that I'm going to be in there. So I have an idea. Why don't you take the lead, and I'll just sit back and be a fly on the wall and just let you handle it and see what you find out by talking to Henry.
Oh, so like I'm on a treasure hunt all by myself. You know where the treasure is hidden, but you're just sending me out on the pirate island. I got to figure it all out on my own.
Yeah, that's it. Consider it a pirate quest. We'll let you take it away. Ready? I'll count you down. One. Oh, wait, I start with three.
It's 3, 2, 1. How long have you been doing this? You're like you're counting 1, 2, 3. No, it's 3, 2, 1. You go up high and count down low. 3, 2, 1. That's the rate.
Look, just to mess you up, I'm going to start with 4. Okay.
Okay.
4, 3, 2.
Do I start on?
I was driving to work one morning. It was a snowstorm and there was like snow on the roads and I hit an icy patch. The car spun around, narrowly missed a truck. I slid off the road into a ditch and it was a traumatic experience for me. And I was a little bit shaken. And fortunately, a woman pulled over. She said, "Can I give you a ride?" And I said, "Yes, that would be great." I said, "I'm on my way to work." So I jumped in her car and she said, "Where do you work?" And I could not for the life of me remember where I worked. I had no recollection. And she's like, I said, "It's a TV station." And I was on morning TV I was doing. And she's like, and I literally could only remember like a TV channel from like 10 years earlier that I worked at. I'm a mile from work. And all of a sudden I've had this traumatic experience. My brain's been jostled around and I can't speak. And that's when I had this realization that when things are not going right in your body, in your stuff going on, that sometimes things don't come out your mouth just quite the same way. And could that be a way for us to see by someone's talking what's going on in their brains? That's what we're taking a look at today. Welcome everybody, I'm Darren.
And I'm Jeff. And today we're talking with Henry O'Connell from Canary Speech. Welcome to the Voice Box, Henry. It is good to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with both of you.
Henry, I'm so intrigued because you're doing exactly what would have helped me had I like had something like figuring out, hey, what am I talking? I can't figure it out on my sliding off the road thing. That could have changed things. So what exactly is Canary all about? What are you guys doing?
You know, whenever I'm asked that question, Darren, and thanks, I always tell people at our core, we're a speech and language company. What we're trying to do is to analyze speech and language and its connection with how our human condition is. So we're analyzing speech and language for human condition and diseases. And speech is so rich in data and it's so wonderful, complex. We utilize so many different things. We're utilizing our brain and our central nervous system, our respiration, our vocal cords, our tongue, our cheeks, our mouth, everything engages. And I always tell people, if you're Italian, you're also using your hands a lot. And I grew up in an Irish-Italian neighborhood in Connecticut, and we used to always tease each other. But speech is a wonderful, complex set of data. And when something's not right with us health-wise, whether it's a concussion or an event like you had, that can both elevate our stress levels as well as potentially give us a mild concussion. Those kind of things can impact on our speech. And if we analyze our speech, we may understand the underlying disease state much better.
Well, I got to find out. So you're now analyzing someone's speech. You take a sample of their speech and the way they're talking, the words they're using. What kinds of things are you able to detect? Certainly you'd be able to detect if someone had a concussion. That's, you know, obviously their words are slurred or whatever. What else are you able to figure out and detect purely from someone's speech?
Well, there's a range of diseases that we've done quite a bit of study on. But so if you think about mood disorders, depression, anxiety, PTSD, those kind of things we can measure in an individual speech. As a person's stress levels increase, their speech patterns change in a range of different ways, but in predictable ways. Certainly the same is true for things like depression. And we've done clinical trials following standard tool sets for measuring depression. And we're able to correlate with those tool sets very, very nicely from as little as 30 seconds of speech. We can process that and provide the clinician with a score within seconds of time.
I got to find out. So give me some specifics. What are some real things? Like, do they use a certain word? Are there pauses between words? Do they choose? What are some actual real examples that would detect any of those things that you're talking about?
So some of these things are noticeable at the word level. So in a Parkinson's patient or an Alzheimer's patient, you see predictable word patterns and changes. So a Parkinson's patient's words tend to get longer. So you can detect in their speech that they have Parkinson's disease from that. But below the word level, there are elements of tonal changes or changes in how we say words, whether the inflection is up when it's supposed to be or not. And our technology can follow those subtle changes, which are characteristic of a particular disease. And then below that level in speech, there are features that are the elements of how speech is created. So those features are things like jitter and a whole range of different characters that the central nervous system uses and we recognize as mathematical elements. We call them features in speech or biomarkers in speech. Those can also be detected and followed. And depending on the pattern of those between a normal individual and a diseased individual with a similar disease or human condition like stress or anxiety, these patterns change. And so we're able to see these very subtle changes in pattern using machine learning and AI.
I was picturing if I were in a car and I had an accident and like maybe I call OnStar or whatever like that. The OnStar using Canary technology would be able to say, hey, we think your brain's a little scrambled, just by the way. You know, you had an accident, you think you're okay, or something, you had a flat tire, you had a blowout, but we think you're not, you shouldn't be driving, or something along those lines. And maybe even like you know, like some kind of hotline for mental health, they would also be able to perceive what kind of conditions someone is in from their doing that. Are those some case studies? And what are some other things that you're looking at?
Sure, I think both of those are realistic uses for the technology. What we find ourselves right now, to give you some practical examples, we're working with a range of different hospitals where an individual comes in for treatment of say cardiac event, so congestive heart failure. After their discharge, the normal process is to follow them for up to 3 months with phone calls 2 to 3 times a week. Canary Speech interfaces into those phone calls, and we're able to listen to the conversation between the caregiver, a nurse, and the patient, let's say Mary, at home. And Mary is talking to the caregiver, and we actually assess Mary's voice for stress, anxiety, and tiredness. That gives the nurse an understanding of how Mary is doing emotionally with her disease at home. We also listen to pulmonary sounds because changes in the pulmonary sounds could indicate potential pneumonia. And pneumonia is very dangerous for a congestive heart failure person. The other thing that has been noticed with congestive heart failure patients is basic changes in language from maybe the first call. Because Mary's going to receive calls from her nurse practitioner or a nurse probably 30 times over the next month or so. And so we record the first call with Mary. And if we recognize changes in vocal patterns, similar to the word changes we were talking about earlier. If those occur, that's an early indication that Mary may be at risk of another cardiac event. So that gives the nurse proactively the opportunity to deal with that. And that's all real time flowing to Mary while she's doing the phone call.
I don't understand this. I get if you've got like a brain thing, if you've got like Alzheimer's, you got Parkinson's, you got something that's affecting your brain. I can see how that would be affecting someone's speech, but you're telling me someone's like heart or something is also other things that are not connected to that are still affecting someone's speech. Did that come as a surprise to you, or were you looking for that as all along?
It was somewhat of a surprise. Now, let me explain. We don't think that we can diagnose that a heart attack is going to happen by some reading of the heart. We think there are other technologies that can do that. But cardiac patients often see changes to their speech patterns, and we can definitely recognize those changes. And I think, you know, while you were asking me this, I was thinking, well, we generally measure central nervous system things because speech is created from codes coming from the central nervous system. It drives our respiration, our vocal cords, our jaw, our tongue, our lips, how we form words. All of those are messages coming from our brain, our central nervous system, that allow you and I to be talking right now without a script. We're just talking. And that's how wonderful our mind is and how fast our mind is functioning.
Wait, Henry, you say that. I got a whole script right here in front of me, word for word. I'm like, no, just kidding.
You're so perfect. So we were a little surprised when one of our hospital partners said there is often reported in the literature that there are changes in vocal patterns for 3 to 4 days before a cardiac event. Families report that to us, and it's been studied. Could you guys listen for that? And the answer is yes, we could listen for that. And what's wonderful is that I'm not listening for the heartbeat. I'm listening for what are maybe secondary pieces of evidence that are indicative of an individual who is suffering from a cardiac event or from a future one. What's wonderful is not everyone whose patterns change will end up with a heart attack, but many, many do. And if we can proactively address that, they can probably prevent many of those cardiac events from occurring.
It's fascinating what you're talking about. Can you give me a specific example? Because you mentioned words, sometimes the words get longer or different things like that, but also some other markers like with their tongue and their cheek and the way they form words. Can you give me a specific example of like a word that might be pronounced one way or might be done another way depending on what's happening? Do you know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to get some little nugget real life example of
sure
what the software listens for.
So one of the classic examples of this in speech is Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie is a novelist, an American novelist that wrote for 40 years and published across a 40-year period.
Hey, Henry, but before we get letters, she was British. But she was a novelist.
Yeah, she was a novelist. She was British, but we adopted her into the U.S.
Yeah.
and Jeff, thank you. I'm gonna have to make a note on that. Just a moment, I have my pen. Very good.
Put it on your script that you've got there, okay?
Yes, I will. So across this period of her life, she wrote these very wonderful novels that were complex. They were rich with language. And we could go back, she died with Alzheimer's disease. And we could go back and you could look at her life in her novels. And across time, the complexity of her stories got less complex. I mean, they just shrunk in complexity. But even more importantly, or maybe more importantly, her word usage got smaller. So she went from using complex words to using simpler language to describe what she was thinking. And you could follow her life. Now that's at the word level. what Canary has done at the biomarker level is to enhance our ability to be specific with the disease. Not just that they had Alzheimer's disease, but very, very accurately to predict early Alzheimer's using these biomarkers, which, as I mentioned, are subunits of language. Imagine the word important. And we think about important, and it's created as importantant. But im requires a number of data exchanges between the central nervous system and everything that's driving it. Im. I had to move my lips in a range of ways to say it. That doesn't happen without the central nervous system telling my musculature to do that. And I have to expel a certain amount of air through my vocal cords. And the central nervous system commands all of that to happen. And that's all happening self-consciously. I'm not consciously saying, okay, get ready, brain. I'm going to say im. All of it happens without my conscious knowledge. It is learned. We do learn languages. However, the central nervous system is so wonderful and our brain is so wonderful. It's able to do this. It creates, from the orchestra, it creates this symphony of language. And as Jeff often says, there's a musical element to it also. So if I'm excited about what we're talking about, you not only hear the words I'm saying, you hear excitement in it. Now that's an unspoken thing, but it's absolutely communicated. If I'm sad or withdrawn, you could be on an elevator with me and perceive that in a simple conversation. If you call a family member on the phone, you can't see their face, you can't see their body language, and within moments, and I assure you, it's irritatingly accurate, I'll say to my daughter, honey, what's up? I'll know when she's sad, I'll know when she's anxious, I'll know when she's happy, I'll know when she's excited, and it has nothing to do with the words. So not only is our central nervous system creating words that become a symphony of expression, but it adds to that these human elements of emotion. And Canary Speech has found we're capable of measuring not only from the words that are spoken, but also from these unspoken elements, we're able to measure stress and anxiety or depression or other human emotions, which is important. Yeah. Doctors do it all the time. We do it with our family all the time.
Did you hear you said it's important? You brought that word back into it, important. Again. See?
Pulled it right back in there.
You didn't even have to think about it. It just came right out.
Yes.
Quick question for you. If you had a genie in a box, in the voice box here, you're going to rub the box, the genie's going to come out, grant you any wish that you can have anything to do with voice speech technology. What do you wish for? What's a stumbling block? What do you want to have happen? What technology you want to come your way? Anything come to mind that you would ask the genie for?
Well, we're capable of creating models, transferring audio captured on smart devices to the web, all within medically acceptable HIPAA compliant environments. We're able to do all of that right now. It requires capturing of audio, goes to the web, runs through an engine, runs through a speech model, returns a score, and we can do that in 2 seconds. However, I could imagine, and we are right now looking for the genie, and we're talking with some companies who we think may have that genie, where this could all be accomplished on a chip on the device or on an earbud, so that individuals who have some type of impairment could be receiving real-time counsel to help live a more normal life in the space they're in. So that doctors could simply turn on their cell phone and everything would happen for Mary, the patient, right there. It wouldn't go to the web, it wouldn't come back. And you think about the convenience of that occurring. Today we do blood pressure measurements and we do a range temperature measurements and a range of other things right on device. Speech will evolve, I believe, so that it can be accomplished right on device. And then it can be available in a more a broader way and used more effectively to help change the life of people. Okay.
Love it. Do you know what kind of work I call that? I call that important. Get it?
You're perfect.
Henry, thanks so much for stopping in and sharing your ideas and stuff with going. What's going on with you? I love hearing what has happened and where things might go in the future, and keep at it, because it's going to change lives and change the world. And thanks so much for visiting with us on the Voice Box.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you, Jeff. It's our pleasure, my pleasure, to speak with both of you. Thank you.
And Jeff, you have been working with Canary for years, so you're sort of in depth on this. So tell me, what do you see in the future? What are some things that they can be doing that you're like, there's some amazing stuff. What's coming down the road that add on to what Henry said?
You know, there's so many cool applications of this kind of technology. Here's how I'm going to know that we've made it, that it's hit the mainstream. When I go to the doctor for my annual physical, and, you know, he takes my blood and he puts that through an array of tests, and he takes my urine or whatever he takes, puts it through some chemical tests.
Thanks for putting that thought in my mind, okay? You could have left out the urine part, okay?
Oh, come on, you're saying they don't take your urine when you go in for your physical? Of course.
No, they don't. They don't take my urine. They let me keep it all to myself.
Yeah. Go ahead. Okay, you can collect it. No, but I'm looking forward to the day when they'll take your speech. There'll be some way of having you speak, maybe over the course of a couple of days using an app on your phone or whatever, but they'll take your speech and they'll run a battery of tests on that as well and be able to analyze and track the existence or the threat of different conditions.
It's sort of like when you go to the eye doctor. When you go to the eye doctor and you have to read the chart and see and then instead the doctor gives you a script and says, just read these three paragraphs, and maybe even from that they can glean the way you say different things. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I know, that's where I hope that this is going. But it's for more than that. Like, you gave the example of like OnStar in your car, right? There are a lot of places where we would like to know, is someone like under a lot of stress? And that could be for people in critical positions, like a pilot or an astronaut or a firefighter or a police officer, that you want to track their mental state. Are they suffering PTSD or some kind of stress that needs to be treated, and so forth? So I think there are all sorts of applications of this, and in my mind, this is one of the most exciting avenues of research and future technology for speech technology.
I agree. I'm riveted by it. I think it's so cool. And I think the potential applications are phenomenal. So we're crossing our fingers and hoping the best for Canary to do good stuff.
Indeed.
Indeed. Thanks so much for joining us today for this important conversation. See, I'm trying to work that important as many times. I don't know why. Just because
it's going to be with you. It's going to be an important word to use all the time.
And it's important to use it in important ways. And
important.
Never mind. We'll keep trying to figure out how many ways we can work that word into it. Thanks, everybody, for listening on The Voice Box. I'm Darren.
And I'm Jeff. We'll talk to you next time.